This is the Future of HR podcast, episode 80.
And the truth is that no matter what level you're at, whether you're early career, mid-career, or whether you're Michelle Obama, who talks about in her book, The Light We Carry, she says that she has these gremlins, I call them gremlins or inner critics, or she feels a level of imposter syndrome. So if she's feeling it, and I put this in my book, we're all going to feel it. And that is a product of doing something different, challenging yourself, going through a transition. Even if the transition feels manageable, when we're going through something, we're going to feel levels of doubt. And that is part and parcel and paired with anytime we take a risk, right? That feels scary to us. That quote is about we're going to feel it. And then what's the next step you can take anyway to move through it?
How can you master your mindset? Why should you embrace and lean into the mantra, do it afraid? Hi, I'm your host, JP Elliott, and this is the Future of HR podcast, the only podcast whose mission is to inspire the next generation of HR leaders. On each episode, I interview successful HR executives and thought leaders who are reimagining, rethinking, and leading our field into the future. During our candid conversations, you will learn about their career journeys, their lessons learned along the way, and their insights on how to take our field, and most importantly, your career to the next level. In today's episode, we'll be talking about having the right mindset, leaning into and overcoming imposter syndrome, and how organizations can invest in and develop their female leaders. But what really works when it comes to investing in and developing female leaders? Research by the Institute for Corporate Productivity, also known as I4CP, in their Keeping Women in the Workplace study, found that the top strategies used by the top companies to retain their female leaders were mentoring and coaching programs, investing in career development initiatives for women, and auditing and addressing gender pay equity. While these ideas are a great start, we'll be asking this week's guest, Sohee June, who is a prominent thought leader on women's workplace challenges, what she believes organizations can and should be doing to invest and develop their female leaders as well. This is Sohee's second time in the podcast, and you may remember from episode 14 that she is a premier leadership coach for successful women, CEOs, executives, and entrepreneurs, a TEDx speaker, a Forbes Coaches Council thought leader, a highly sought-after keynote speaker, leadership development expert, and an Amazon best-selling author. With over 20 years in the corporate world, Sohee works with high-achieving female leaders to implement new behaviors and mindsets that transform and help them grow as leaders. Sohee's also the author of two books, and today we'll be discussing her latest one, The Inner Game, Secrets of High-Achieving Women for Navigating Work, Life, and Mindset. Sohee's a great coach and passionate about helping female leaders achieve their goals. I know you'll enjoy this conversation as we discuss what she learned from researching successful women in their 20s, 30s, 40s, 50s, 60s, and 70s. Why having the right mindset is so powerful in overcoming challenges and achieving success. How to build a board of advocates that will challenge and support you over the course of your career. Why imposter syndrome impacts all of us and how to move past it. What organizations can do to invest and develop their female leaders, and her advice for next-gen HR leaders who want to accelerate their career, and much, much more. Sohee, welcome to the Future of HR podcast. How are you?
I'm so excited to be back, JP. Thank you for having me.
We are excited to have you back. You have written a second book in record time. And so we're excited to hear about the book, what's new with you and your career, and what you've been learning working with high-performing female leaders. And so let's start off. You just finished writing your second book called The Inner Game, Secrets of High-Achieving Women for Navigating Work, Life, and Mindset. What made you decide to write the second book, and what do you hope people take away from it?
JP, I love that you said that it felt like record time. This actually took a lot longer than I had anticipated, and really for good reason. The first book was really about my own lived experience, and this book, I wanted it to be very different in the sense of bringing others along the journey with me. And what I realized is, in having the privilege and the honor of coaching C-suite and all the wisdom that they shared, I felt a need to really amplify the wisdom in the book so that everyone can benefit from it. With the successful women in my community and the people that I knew, I got really curious about what makes them successful. And so I wanted to put that in a book that allowed others to feel seen, heard, and valued, and they were not alone in this journey to whatever success looked like for them. So that was really the impetus for the book. And it took 2 or 3 years.
Okay, so a little bit longer than I thought, maybe. But it felt like you got there pretty fast to me. So it's great. And I love that you're really talking about kind of that definition of success and how that's different for each person. And so I have read the whole book. And what I thought was cool was that it really felt not only empathetic to the experience, but inspiring as well. There's a lot of inspiration as you're sharing that lived experiences from the people you've been coaching. So I love that part about it. Talk to me a little bit more about the research you did and how you do executive coaching and like, how did that help? I mean, how many interviews did you have to do? How did you find time to build this in and capture those notes?
I did 2 rounds of surveys. And because I love research and I'm a research geek, as you know, JP, went to the same grad school, it was important to me that I got a diverse set of women into the mix in terms of being able to really get different backgrounds and different levels. And what I was really keenly interested in the first set of surveys is through the different decades of a woman's life in their 20s, 30s, 40s, 50s, 60s, and 70s, what are they facing? What are the biggest challenges? And as I was doing that first set of surveys, I realized, okay, I'm actually now curious about the mindset because, as you know, I coach around mindset, I'm an expert around the mindset, and I really wanted to unearth what was the mindset that allowed these women to, one, navigate challenges through those different decades. And so I went back and did a whole different set of surveying. Some of them, women, were similar from the first round. And then I added a whole lot more of women that allowed me to survey them. Some that were my clients that wanted to share wisdom around their mindset, and some that were just people that I knew that were really high achieving women. And really, it was unearthing, okay, so what is the mindset that holds you back? And what are those that allow you to flourish through different challenges that we all face? Like, what keeps you up at night still? And how do you navigate the job and career transitions, or being at a company that's being bought out, or all of these different things that are really many of us are facing? I wanted to get detailed under the hood about mindset, because I do really believe that when you hone in on that, it is one of the biggest makers of success, really.
Yeah, mindset is so critical. And as you talked about, as we age, it changes a little bit, right? Because there's a consistency of mindset around how do you stay resilient, stay confident, stay focused. But what was interesting is you talked about that you hit different chapters, right? Different stages of people's life and how the mindset shifted. And one of the things that I thought was really interesting was that we talked about the definition of success. And everyone wants to be successful. But in the book, you talk about what people are getting right and wrong about success. Tell us more about that.
Yeah. In the early years of our career, many of us, we ascribe to that traditional definition of success. And by that, I mean, we do want that title and the promotion and the corner office. And those are the usual markers of success. And then what I notice is that there's an interesting transition that happens around mid-career, where you start to really look around, and perhaps that's by the experiences that we've had by then, or just a curiosity that drives this. It's okay, so what's the legacy I'm leaving, and what does success really look like for me? And I think those are some of the questions that really keep women up at night, and just humans in general. Like, how am I making a difference in the world? And that starts to happen in the 40s and into the 50s even more, as we think about legacy and how we've lived our life and have some years to look back on. And so that does start to shift to making an impact, lifting others up. And those are the key themes that I surface and write about in the book. The definition of success definitely changes to more of an internal drive that leaves an impact.
Yeah. And it's also, I think, so important also have your own definition of success, because if we're just looking externally and we're comparing ourselves, it's easy to say, gosh, I'm not doing as much, right? Whether we're on LinkedIn and people are saying I'm getting promoted, or this thing's happening, or you're on Instagram and people are having this amazing lives. If you compare yourself too much, it actually can be a little bit debilitating. Like, oh man, I'm not doing as much. But the people who really are like, this is what success means to me, mm-hmm. they're happier. And I think you found that in the book a little bit and talked about that.
Yeah, I think it's they're happier and they're more resilient and they're able to actually stay in it for the long game. I love using that phrase because even I get caught up in the whole LinkedIn, oh, wow, everyone's doing so much and they're so successful. And for me and the women in the book, what helps to reorient that framing is to look back at your why, what you're doing it for. And that, again, goes to your point about less external, reorient back to why you're doing anything, really. That is what is the differentiator of what success looks like.
Yeah, that's so important to know your why. And I think the book really helps you think about that even more. But you also recommend in the book that female leaders develop a board of advocates. Mm-hmm. Tell us more about this and how do you build one?
I love this question because it's something that I've been playing with myself in building, because what I found to be true for many of the women that I get to coach is that you need to be challenged and diverse perspectives to really help you unlock different ways of thinking. So often we get comfortable, we get into our groove, we need to be challenged. And so I call it the board of advocates because one, they advocate for you, but they also provide one, they can challenge you. One could be somebody that actually is a sounding board. One could be a mentor. They all serve different roles. And that's so key to if we want to grow and to take on bigger and more or different, right? Whatever that looks like for you. So I always say, build your board of advocates, these people that are in your corner, that are either rallying or supporting or giving you different ways to look at things. Those are all key to growth. That's the foundational stuff I found for all of these women. And then how you build it is one, I say, like, get curious with who's in your network currently. And are there people that you admire about either their career or maybe the way that they think or maybe the way that they challenge you? And then start to meet with them intentionally. So I always say this doesn't have to be a formal, hey, JP, will you be my board of advocate member or mentor? It's about connecting with that person to say, hey, I really love the way that you think about this, and I'd love to sit with you more. And you're building that relationship in a way that is very intentional. And it all starts with a place of curiosity. When you get curious about one, who's in your network now, how can you build a relationship and actually be very intentional about what you need? There's a lot of magic.
That's such great advice. And I would add that also just being vulnerable enough to reach out and then say, hey, I'd love your help on this. I'd love your advice. Help me think this through. Because I think what you find is when you are a little more vulnerable and you're really more honest about and transparent what you're hoping to do, people are much more willing to help you. And it's hard sometimes because you want to think you have it all figured out to have that board of advocates to reach out to somebody. I just actually had a call this last week with somebody who's early in career who reached out to me because of the podcast. And I was like, hey, look, I'm happy to have a conversation with you. And because they took that chance. And so I think to your point of reaching out and people you admire, whether it's you, me, anybody else, not saying call me, but if you want to, you can. But I think it's really important to be vulnerable and really reach out and say, hey, look, I'm looking for help. I can learn from you and build that long-term relationship.
I found that that's one of the key markers of a successful mentoring relationship or any type of board of advocates relationship, where if there isn't that kind of sharing of challenges and of the vulnerable stuff, it makes it really hard to build trust. And at the end of the day, no one's going to be offended because you reached out for something that you admired about that person, right? So that's the reach right there.
Building on that, you have a chapter where we talk about self-doubt. People might be a little bit doubting themselves to reach out. And in it, you say that true courage is to do it afraid, which I loved. So do it afraid. So tell us more about what it means to do it afraid.
Yeah, I have to give credit to my dear friend and colleague, Selena Rezvani, who coined that term. And she also has a lovely book out called Quit Confidence. And in that book, we were just talking about it probably about a year ago, where she and I get together regularly to, one, connect and challenge ourselves, each other. And she told me that phrase, and it really blew my mind. And the truth is that no matter what level you're at, whether you're early career, mid-career, or whether you're Michelle Obama, who talks about in her book, The Light We Carry, she says that she has these gremlins, I call them gremlins or inner critics, or she feels a level of imposter syndrome. So if she's feeling it, and I put this in my book, we're all going to feel it. And that is a product of doing something different, challenging yourself, going through a transition. Even if the transition feels manageable, when we're going through something, we're going to feel levels of doubt. And that is part and parcel and paired with anytime we take a risk. right? That feels scary to us. That quote is about, we're going to feel it. And then what's the next step you can take anyway to move through it? My framing around this is feel it. And then how do you move through it? Because it isn't about getting rid of it. It isn't about, hey, I'm going to eradicate fear. And I know there's people out there, JP, that say that, like, ooh, just do it anyway. Who cares about fear? That's a very binary way of looking at it. It's a feeling that we have to acknowledge and then advocate for ourselves about how do we move forward that allows us to get closer to.
Yeah, that's really important because we're all going to have anxiety, feel imposter syndrome, but it can't let us be paralyzed by that. We can't stop.
That's right. Yeah, that's the differentiator. Like, are you going to be paralyzed by it? You feel it, acknowledge it, and then what's that step forward?
And the good news is most people can't see what's inside your head. We don't have thought bubbles yet. And so if that's not happening, don't let them see it. Just keep moving forward. And sometimes you have to fake it till you make it a little bit. But I think mostly if you take action, you build confidence.
That's and right. That's the quote I've said in the book. Is confidence is built in the doing.
Right. That's so critical. So it's easy for us to say that because, of course, we must have that moment. But I love the idea of do it afraid. Take that step and keep pushing yourself forward. And I think you'll get the results you're hopefully looking for.
Yeah. And I do want to wrap this back to that's what a board of advocates is for. It's like if you feel with fear, talk to them, like share it with them because they will probably give you tips, strategies, and their own stories about how they move forward. And I have an example too. Just last week, as I was doing something new, I was walking the red carpet for a gala that was very meaningful to me. And I'm telling you, JP, I felt a lot of nerves. I was nervous. I had a feeling of imposter syndrome of like, do I belong here? Look at all these amazing folks. And I did it afraid. I took a deep breath and I answered all the interview questions as best as I could. And interestingly enough, after the fact, I was asking someone that was there with me, did I look scared? And they were like, no, not at all. So this is all to say that nobody on the outside knows except for you. So do it. Do the thing you're afraid of doing.
Hey everyone, after a quick break, Sohee and I will talk about the best and worst advice that female leaders have received over their career. So stick around and we'll be right back. The Institute for the Future recently came out with a report that said 85% of jobs that will exist in 2030 haven't been invented yet. While I can't predict the future, I am certain that the only way to future-proof your career is by learning to learn. This applies to our organizations as well. And as HR leaders, our job is to ensure our team members have the skills and capabilities needed now and in the future. This is why I'm excited to announce the Future of HR podcast is now sponsored by Biz Library. Biz Library is the place where learning happens. They're your one-stop shop for all of your compliance, upskilling needs, and leadership development challenges. Biz Library is an industry leader for high-quality, off-the-shelf content that will solve your compliance needs, support the upskilling of teams, and will help your leaders to lead. If you're looking to elevate learning in your organization, give Biz Library a call as they can support you with their innovative L&D platforms, best-in-class content, and unrivaled strategic support. And if you mention that JP at the Future of HR podcast sent you, you'll receive a 10% discount on year one of your Biz Library contract. So head on over to bizlibrary.com and see how they can help you to elevate learning in your organization today. You also talk in your book some of the best and worst advice that female leaders have ever received, which I think probably was a lot of fun to hear some of that, especially when you hear that bad advice and you know it's bad advice, you can look back on it, hopefully, and impact your career in a bad way.
Yes.
But how do you think about career advice first? And then second, I'd love for you to hear, you know, share with us some of the best or worst advice that you heard while writing the book.
I think advice is really one we should be open to. Now, the difference is whether you act or not. My framing around this is listen to the advice, ask for it, similar to feedback. And then you get to decide how you integrate that, meaning you can act or do it a different way, right? So we have agency. So that's how I look at it. And then the worst advice, I'll start there, that really resonated, and that's in the book, is the advice about keep your head down. This is one that in the book, my colleague and friend Lisa shared was her worst advice. And I would say, yes, 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 absolutely. Because a lot of us, men or women, and especially women too, have heard, just do the work, do the good work, work the 60, 70 hours. Don't talk about all the stuff that you've done. Just you'll get tapped. So we grow up with this notion that if we just keep our head down, especially for someone like me who's an immigrant, and I've been told throughout my years, just keep quiet, do the good work, and then you'll get the rewards. I think that that does us a complete disservice. And this one is really problematic for women in particular, that we need to learn to advocate for ourselves, ask for what we want, and talk about the things that we've accomplished in a way that is telling of both the challenges and all the things that we've accomplished along the way. That is absolutely the worst advice. Keep your head down.
You have to be your best advocate. The reality is that no one cares more about your career than you. You have to tell people what you're doing. They're wrapped up in their own world, what they're doing. You need to be like, look, I rock that. I not only did we deliver that project. And if you're a leader, it's important to do it for your team as well, because they're looking to you, their career, they're riding with you as that leader. And so the whole team can do better and be seen as more effective. It's not just for yourself, but even for your team as well, to be like, hey, this is what we're doing. This is what we've accomplished, and we deserve that credit. So I think that is really bad advice. What was the best advice?
The best advice is fake it till you make it. I know that there's two sides to this phrase. And the reason why I believe this is the best advice is because it goes exactly to what we talked about in terms of do it afraid. And when you get under the hood of this advice, for me, it's about believing in yourself and really betting on you. That, yeah, even though it feels risky and you're scared and you might have all the nerves underneath, knowing that you can do it and on the other side of that action, there will be great rewards. So, yeah, you don't have to have all the answers. You don't have to have it all buttoned up. In fact, don't wait till you have it all buttoned. Have just this belief in yourself and fake it if you need to and do it. Do the action. So I love this advice.
That's great. So let's talk about how you coach and develop female leaders. So as an executive coach for high achieving female leaders, how can organizations better support and develop them and their female leaders in their organizations? What specific actions do you recommend?
Yes, there's several. And one, this is the quick one and one that people talk about often, is to really create active mentoring programs, right? So if your company doesn't have one, this is worth the investment because there's so much research around the benefits of active mentorship. And by that, I mean making it a process that is embraced by all levels of the organization. So getting buy-in from top to bottom and making sure that there is participation from every level as much as possible. So active mentoring is one. And the other part of this is around high potential programs. Are there programs in which women can participate that develop their leadership skills? Investing in leadership development programs specifically for women. And here's the other thing that I really recommend HR folks do, which is around the conversation for succession. When there is conversation that is about performance management, the high potentials of the organization, and succession management, are they really looking at the women in the pool, and are they looking at skills that may not be traditionally thought of as important, such as how connected they are, how they think macro, how they influence maybe indirectly, all of these different skill sets that I think are markers of a great leader that aren't talked about as much. This is what I advise HR folks to do, is really turn the table and look at succession conversations differently so that women can be at the forefront of this.
I think it's really good advice around mentoring and really thoughtful about looking at succession plan differently. I'm interested, Zoe, in your take on this, what some research I've seen and how I've thought about this. A lot of times for female leaders, they might be in a support function, right? And obviously, majority of females are CHROs. But how do we get more women into the pipeline on the P&L earlier in their career? Because if we want to have more female CEOs, they have to manage a P&L. They've got to be more in the business, not a support function. Mm-hmm. What are you seeing there? What kind of advice do you have or when you're coaching leaders around that piece?
I have advice for actually women and the leaders as well, which is when you're starting out in your career, I really advise people to look sideways. So it's this concept of the jungle gym rather than looking straight up at what's next in terms of, am I going to get a bigger title in the same role? It looks sideways so that you can diversify and broaden your experience so that when there is a bigger role, they can see you as somebody that has gone internationally or managed to function in a different team than what might be traditional. So taking those risks, I think the payoffs are so much more than the risk entails. That's one for people in their early career or just career in general, just looking sideways. And then for leaders, I would say look outside of the traditional areas in terms of if you're in HR and looking for another HR person, I would say look broad, again, macro and in different areas of the organization to see who might be that surprising person that you think, oh, wow, this person's accomplished a lot and has done it in different ways. Maybe they would be a great person in HR, for example. I think you and I had this conversation earlier, which is we have to ask different questions. We have to look at things and flip it on its head in order for HR to continue to evolve, in order for organizations to keep pace with the dynamic nature of work. We have to question everything.
I love that. No, you're right. We can go in laterally, getting different experiences. Taking people out of HR, going to a different function is so critical early in your career as well. Mm-hmm. And let's double click on that a little bit more, because thinking about the inner game and what you learned in this new book, what advice would you have for next gen HR leaders who want to go farther and faster in their career? Has this book and the research helped you think about this differently?
The thing that I always go back to is do the inner work. For folks in HR, if you are wanting to make a big impact, do the work yourself of developing yourself and continuing to add to your bucket so that you can be strategic and actually be at the forefront rather than a lagging person that is thinking of ways to support, and you can actually push the envelope. So get yourself out there in different ways, learn and develop, and definitely do the reading of the tea leaves, looking at future trends, looking at what's out there, so that you can be a strategic partner and a value to the organization.
That's great. All right, Sohi, you've been through the drill. This is the last question. So what is one word or phrase that you believe will define the future of HR over the next 5 to 10 years?
The phrase that I have is dynamic possibilities. This gets to the inner game of looking at what's possible and anchoring on that and understanding that the traditional ways that we've looked at things really need to be unpacked. The landscape of work is super dynamic. We just have to look at past few years to understand just how dynamic it is and the way that it changes and how fast it's changing. We have technology involved with this as well, even more so. So rather than being afraid of what that brings, it's about being anchored into what's possible and being flexible.
So yeah, I love that. The book is The Inner Game, Secrets of High Achieving Women for Navigating Work, Life, and Mindset. Thank you for coming back on the podcast and for all you do. We're excited to see the book and keep you posted on how it does.
Thank you for having me, JP.
Thank you so much for listening to this episode of Future of HR Podcast. Thanks again to Sohi for sharing her insights from her new book, The Inner Game, and her advice on how to invest in and develop female leaders. As always, you can go to futureofhr.com to view all of our past episodes and learn more about our mission to inspire the next generation of HR leaders. And if you enjoyed this episode of Future of HR, be sure to subscribe or share our podcast with at least one other person. Or even better, please leave a review on Apple or Spotify podcasts. This really helps us to grow the podcast and helps with our mission of inspiring the next generation of HR leaders. We'll be back next week with two representatives from the Learning Forum's CLO Lift Council, Noah Rabinowitz and Brian Hackett. Noah is the VP Talent Development at Commonwealth Fusion Systems, and Brian Hackett's the founder of the Learning Forum. Together with chief learning officers from Starbucks, McKinsey, Comcast, PepsiCo, MasterCard, and many others, they've come together to tackle the systemic problems in learning that affect and impact learning initiatives at all organizations. In my conversation with Noah and Brian, we'll get a preview of their research and the upcoming white papers on the CLO Lift Council, including return on time invested, skill surging and the importance of skills, and why governance of learning is so important. If you lead an L&D function, this is a conversation you will not want to miss. Thanks again for listening to the Future of HR and being part of our community.